This is Near FM.
Weekday mornings from 11.
This is Northside Today.
I'm joined in studio now by Alison Gilliland, the Labour Party councillor for the Beaumont ward, the Ballymun Beaumont ward. Good morning, Alison.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Okay, I'm sure everybody knows you, but just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm the local Labour councillor for Beaumont Donaghmead, so it includes Clonshock, Kilmore, Balmain, Clongriffin, Kilbarrick. It's really, really large ward, and it's right smack in the middle of Dublin Bay North. So we would have the Clontarf ward to one side and then sort of the Howth Sutton area to the other. And I was first elected to the council back in 2014.
We're going to talk about modular housing. We're also going to talk about the housing in Belcamp. And that's not necessarily modular housing, is that there's old folks there.
You might remember back about 6 months ago that Dublin City Council decided to proceed with modular housing as emergency accommodation for homeless people. Basically, a lot of people who have families are stuck in B&Bs and hotels, and it's not the very best situation, as you can imagine, particularly for children. So they committed to building initially 131 modular houses, sort of the rapid build, and they use an emergency clause in the Planning Act whereby if the council deem it emergency, they can sort of bypass the normal planning procedures. So the selected five different sites across the city, Dublin City Council owned land, and one of them is Belcamp and the other is Poppentry up in Ballymun, which is the one that's almost finished. So the plans for Belcamp are about 38 rapid build housing. But I discovered in talking to some of the locals, there were previous plans for a few other sites in the Belcamp area for a senior citizens complex and for social housing. So what I did was ask the council, would they consider putting those in with the rapid build houses so that we could have a proper planning and development project for Belcamp. Brought a council motion to our local area meeting back in March, and that received the support of the council. So they're going ahead with that.
So there's two sites I'm reading here. Site B comprised of 4 3-bedroom houses.
Yeah,
and 8 senior citizens apartments. And Site C was 16 senior citizen apartments.
Yeah.
But now is there social housing going to come in there as well?
They will be the social housing piece.
They will be the social
housing. And there are two small sites. And then the site for the rapid build housing is along Belcamp Avenue. And it's a big, much bigger site. So they're going to put 34 or 38, I can't remember quite how many, of the rapid builds on it. And they're going to be two-story, sort of your terrace semi-D houses on that. And they're going to be a mix of 2 and 3-bed houses.
So they're not going to be prefabs?
Well, we've moved, I suppose, from calling them modular housing, which conjures up the prefab concept, to rapid build. Another motion I had to the council was that we include bricks and mortar if the contractor can deliver them fast. Originally, when we looked into the concept of modular housing, the key element of looking at that was speed, because modular houses can be put together much faster and erected on site, in the sense that they're partially built in a factory, then transported to the site and they're put together. However, we tendered out, as in Dublin City Council tendered out, for the remaining lots, for 4 lots. And what happened was the market, as in the various developers or companies that do modular housing, couldn't deliver the houses within the time span we wanted. So then they opened it up to bricks and mortar, or if a company can deliver them fast, then that was the key criteria for they accepting the contract.
And they were also originally classified as temporary.
Yes, well, I suppose it's temporary in the sense that the people moving into them would be homeless people, people who are already staying in hotels or B&Bs for their emergency accommodation. And they would live in the modular houses until they're allocated a social house or a house with voluntary housing. And at the moment, like, it's a really, really desperate situation. We have over 1,500 people in emergency accommodation. This particular area Area B, Coolock, has one of the longest housing lists across all of the four Dublin local authorities, and we cannot keep up with demand. So these people coming to inhabit the modular houses could be there for up to a year. So while there have been, I suppose, complaints and concerns raised about the transient nature of people moving in and out of the units, it's actually going to be 9-10 months, perhaps a year or more.
And then they'll be moved on.
And then they'll be allocated a house.
So they're going to move on into social housing, I take it.
Yes.
Where's the social housing going to come from?
Well, we have a big development coming on stream up at the top of the Oscar Traynor Road to the left as you go up towards the roundabout, the Lawrence Lands, as it's called. Yeah. And there's 655 units going to be built up there, and 30% of them are going to be social housing. And then, like in many developments, which is down in Balmain and Clongriffin, you might get voluntary housing bodies buying up a block, or you might get people buying it for investment and renting it out, so that it would also accommodate people on the social housing list where they're going into private rental.
I know I've spoken to people from Balmain and also about the lands up here in the Oscar Traynor Road, and there's concerns within the Lorcan Residents Association was that approached me, and there was concerns there about the volume.
Yeah, I think the site itself is bounded on the north side by the Port Tunnel M1, that main carriageway going into the city centre. So there's no exit for vehicles out of there. There will be an exit. The Lorcan residence, there's going to be one small lot. I think it's got 76 houses that are going to exit directly into Lorcan, but none of the other units can exit through that lot into Lorcan. They'll be exiting onto a variety of roads, the Castle Tymon Road and mainly the Oscar Traynor Road. Now, that's going to raise huge issues when it comes to traffic, because like I actually live on that road, and at peak times in the morning it is chock-a-block. I've raised this with Dublin City Council. I've asked that they conduct a traffic and public transport audit of the area so that they can ameliorate problems before they arise. There's also plans going up around the back of it, parallel with the carriageway going into town, for a bus line that would come from Swords, come up round that roundabout and go down and then meet the Swords Road again on the way into town. Now, I made the suggestion that perhaps cars from the estate could also use that to alleviate congestion on the Oscar train. But I didn't get a concrete answer to that, because again, that's something that's in the plans. It's dependent on funding from the NTA.
Yeah, because I was going to raise that with you, because the Oscar Traynor Road is really, there's only one lane there for cars. The other lane is a bus lane.
And when you think of it, John, like there's not even a bus that goes directly from those lands down to the North Side Shopping Centre, which would be the main shopping area for the estate. Now, the 17A goes to Beaumont Hospital and loops around, but as for something going straight down in a few minutes, there's nothing.
You mentioned Balmain there, and we'll talk a little bit about that. This whole social housing and putting people into private schemes to be used as social housing, it's a very delicate subject. Like you mentioned in your press release about talking to the residents associations, which is very, very important.
Like, I think that's key. Like, we had a briefing on the new development up there in Thornwood, off the Beaumont Road. Yeah. And that, the entire estate, 68 family houses, have been bought by TUA. And TUA is an approved housing body. And you would have, they have part ownership of Clare Hall Village. And you would have a approved housing body. Clwyd has some blocks down in Balmain. So basically what they do, they're voluntary, but they work with the local authorities, and they either buy or they build houses and then take people from the social housing list. You'll often hear, I suppose, people saying that they're on the list for the voluntary housing. So people on the housing list can choose to go on the voluntary housing list. And that basically means when a voluntary housing comes on stream, Dublin City Council will refer the people on that list into TUA or Clwyd, for example. What is different, though, is that the Voluntary Housing Association carries out a really strict vetting process with prospective tenants. So they will be asking them for references. They'll guard the vet them and they also interview them. They manage the estates and they want, I suppose, family-friendly, sustainable environment. So if people have sort of previous convictions, perhaps for antisocial behaviour, or they have been in trouble with the guard, they may not make the list for TUA or for Clwyd. And I think once people begin to understand how the allocations work into an estate, and how the vetting process works, and also the management of the estate once the families are there, I think that alleviates a lot of the concerns. The main concern that arises is antisocial behaviour.
Yeah, and that's the point you made about talking to the residents is very, very important.
Exactly.
I can't stress that enough, because there are some concerns with residents who are maybe in negative equity and are paying huge mortgages, and they're things that people aren't sure of. Like I did mention to you earlier on, somebody said to me about management charges and are people in social housing paying management charges, but nobody's really sure about the answer to that.
Yeah, I think nearly all, as far as I'm aware, apartment complexes, I live in one myself, the residents pay the service charges or the management fees. Now, I live in one, so I'm the owner-occupier, so I pay mine. If it's an investment property, the landlord will pay it because it's in his or her name, but obviously he or she would recoup that through the rates or the rent that the tenants pay. When it comes to the housing approved housing bodies, they themselves may pay it. I doubt very much if they would ask the tenants to pay, because the tenants, more than Dublin City Council tenants, would pay a small rent to the council or to the approved housing body depending on their income, and then the rest is subsidised by the council.
Yeah, and a lot of things that are said by, as I said, people in negative equity is a bit politically incorrect. You know,
yeah,
but it still has to be.
It has to be said and it has to be acknowledged. And I do think the profile of people on the social housing list has really changed, particularly the profile of people that are becoming homeless. And when you become homeless, you go on the social housing list if you're not already on it. Many of those are coming from private rental. And it could be a case where somebody loses their job or their income is reduced and they just can't pay the rent. And there's nothing else available at a rent that they can afford. So they're becoming homeless and they're going on the housing list. So that very much has changed. I think we've gone from the days where it's, I suppose, the stereotypical, when you think of people on the housing list, they're on unemployment benefit, perhaps long term. Like it's very, very different nowadays. And I think people sort of need to work through that in their heads around the type of people that we are talking about and not discriminate on old stereotypes.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I keep bringing this up when I talk to different organisations about, in particular, homelessness. And there used to be this stereotypical profile of a homeless person is either has addiction problems.
Absolutely,
or, I keep saying, but that's not the case anymore.
No.
It's a
lot of
minority.
Them are really ordinary, decent families. And to be perfectly honest with you, if I lost my job in the morning, I could end up homeless in 6 months because I wouldn't be able to pay my mortgage. And there are people that are in private rental and are homeowners with large mortgages that would be in the exact same situation.
Yeah, it's really is. It's very, very serious.
It's very serious and it's very sad. And, you know, one of the things, the only way to really resolve it is to build more houses, because it's a supply and demand issue. There are not enough homes for people in the city.
That's another thing now that I came across on various occasions, that people will say that the social housing and the modular housing and all this are being built in areas that already have a lot of social housing. Do you ever come across that?
Yeah, well, if you look at the sites that the council have chosen for the modular housing, they're all in areas that already have high densities of social housing. We did question that in the council, and it's because Dublin City Council own that land. So when it's their land, it's easier and quicker to build on it. If the council had to buy land, and that would probably come on stream down the line, that's, I suppose, there's a time factor in that. By the time you make contact with the owner, get into negotiations. If it's an open sale, then you're bidding against other various developers, perhaps, for the land. But the ones that have already been chosen, yes, and it's a very valid criticism that it's already in areas with high social housing.
What about unoccupied?
Yeah, the voids, and I think, you know, there was money. Money has been dedicated to that, and there's always going to be at any one time empty houses because of the changeover between tenants leaving and tenants coming in. And I suppose the council, if a family leaves and is transferred to another house, or perhaps there's a bereavement in the house and it's no longer occupied, the council needs to go in and do an audit on the house to make sure it's up to standard for the next family. They have a mix of their own crews that will do that, and sometimes they contract in external crews for it as well. And it's questions we get quite frequently. Like, you might get a phone call from somebody who is on the housing waiting list to say, listen, I've seen a house on such and such a road, will you look into me? It's voided up to see when it's coming on stream.
Yeah, and there's organisations that will actually go into these houses and do them off their own back.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned there inspectors going in to make sure the house is up to scratch. That was another issue that came up with an interview I did with talking about the rent supplement, and landlords would try to avoid taking people on with rent supplement because they knew this inspection was going to follow.
Yeah, there's a variety of reasons, I suppose, why landlords wouldn't take people with a rent allowance or the housing assistance payment now. And one is that they have to adhere to particular standards from Dublin City Council. They have to be completely registered with the PRTB, have a tax certificate, everything in order. There is legislation now passed, equality legislation, whereby landlords cannot discriminate. They cannot have an ad that says rent allowance or housing assistance paying will not be accepted. Now, the one big question around that is, it's okay not to have it in an ad, but then when you phone up and the landlord hears that as a prospective tenant that you are on rent allowance, they can say no, and it's very hard to prove that they are discriminating against you. The other issue with landlords is, I suppose, and you mentioned the rent allowance, and people have called for an increase in rent allowance. We've already introduced legislation that has only a rent review every 2 years. My fear with increasing rent allowance will be that the lower end of the rental market would increase, because I remember way back in the day buying a house and stamp duty, every time it was increased or decreased, then the house prices went up or down accordingly. And I would fear that if we increase rent allowance, that would happen. And then you were excluding more people from the market, and we could have more people homeless as a result.
And you mentioned HAP there, the housing allowance.
Yeah, the housing assistance payment. Yeah. It's a new scheme now. It's only in use by Dublin City Council for people that are homeless. And it allows for the market rate. So it's 50% on top of the rent allowance. Dublin City Council will pay the month's deposit and will also pay the first month up front. So that takes that financial stress away from families that are looking for a accommodation. They also have a place finder service whereby they scour the ads themselves and try and find suitable accommodation and match accommodation. People who are homeless can do that as well, and the council will support them on it. But the other advantage of HAP is that it allows tenants to work full time. Under the rent supplement scheme, you can only work 19 hours a week, where by under HAP, it gives you more autonomy and more independence.
Now, you mentioned the houses up in Belcamp, and we're talking about the homeless situation, and it's increasing all the time. What time limit are we looking at here? Regards building and putting people into these houses.
Yeah, the one in Poppentry, the one up in Ballymun, there's about four, I think, almost ready, and then the rest will come on stream. So we're looking at them towards this month and next month. They want to begin works up in Belcamp towards the end of the summer. They have what they call enabling works, which is sort of preparing the site, and then you have the houses themselves on that. But they're working towards a timeline of the end of this year of having all the various sites complete and people move into them. Now, you can sort of argue that's a very sort of desirable timeline. If we look at what happened in Ballymun, where we had hoped to get people in before Christmas, and now it's delayed. Although, if you don't aspire to doing it sooner rather than later, things can drag on.
I say it's very frustrating for the people who were taught they were going to be moving into these houses.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. And they're still sitting in their hotel room or in their B&B waiting.
As you said, anyway, it's a huge, huge problem and a horrible situation for
people.
Well,
at least we can see movement, particularly in this area for it. Like, we've the lands I mentioned. You've also got 35 new units down in Buttercup and Darndale, and they'll be ready in September and October. Priory Hall is also being refurbished, and we've units coming on stream there. They're being offered in the first instance to people that moved out, and then they're coming all along in phases. So by this time next year, that entire development should be all occupied.
Priory Hall, that was the pyrite.
That was the pyrite, yeah. And well, pyrite, and it was more the fire, the lack of fire safety in it. We got a tour of it, and it was absolutely disgraceful. The council literally had to deconstruct it back to the concrete. And I remember one of the officials saying to me, and it really stuck in my mind, was whoever poured the concrete and did the sort of the skeleton of it used really good concrete, and that was their saving grace. Otherwise, they would have had to been completely demolished. But that was literally, they had to bring that back piece by piece, and it showed you what the rogue builders did back in the day. Thankfully, since then, the fire safety regulations and the inspections have been improved, that at every step of putting in your fire safety measures is inspected, whereas previously your inspector would go along to the completed apartment complex and you couldn't really tell what was behind the walls and if they had actually done what they were meant to do according to the plan.
Yes, but anyway, as we said, we see some progress, and hopefully the houses and everything will go up very quickly. So we'll move on. I have to ask you, you're a Labour Party councillor. Is there rebuilding necessary now within the Labour Party?
Absolutely. You know, I think we were all pretty devastated by the election, and to go from coming in 2011 with 37 seats to just 7 seats was a massive big shock. Some people will say it was inevitable. I think we've delivered an awful lot in government. We kept a lot of our promises. The key thing for me was the delivering of collective bargaining, a living wage. We raised issues that wouldn't have been raised had Labour not been in government. The marriage equality referendum is another one. But unfortunately, people decided that
it was Labour's fault.
Labour's fault. So we're left with 7. We have 3 of our former TDs running on the Shannon panels, our own Aona Reardon here in Dublin Bay North, Jed Nash and Kevin Humphreys. And then we have 4 other senators and candidates on the other panels. So we might end up with 11, 12, 13 in the Parliamentary Labour Party. Definitely rebuilding is needed. We've a lot of great people that lost their seats. Behind that as well, we've had about 150 people lose their jobs, both in head office and as parliamentary assistants or parliamentary secretaries. So you're probably aware all the candidates met out in City West last week, and the councillors are meeting this weekend just to, I suppose, to discuss where we go to from here and how we can rebuild. I think we're a very valid party. We have a huge amount to contribute to Irish democracy and to, I suppose, government policy going forward. I sometimes look back in 2011, it took us 12 days to put together a programme for government with Fine Gael, because we knew the country was in a mess back in the day and we had to stand up and get on with it. Tomorrow it'll be 42 days since the election and we have no governments, you know.
A lot of people are saying we're better off.
Yeah, well, there is that argument. But, you know, sometimes I think that Fianna Fáil, and particularly looking at what happened, the Labour Party, would you blame them for not wanting to get into government? But the numbers don't add up any other way. It's going to have to be Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin and left-leaning politicians. I don't know, but I think the country deserves a government and people to
there's a lot of determinations there that could come out at the end of it. And like a lot of people say that the Labour Party lost touch with the people. Not only yourself now, you're
yeah, I think people on the ground, and like obviously like internally we would have our own, I suppose, preferences. I suppose would be very much of the old Labour stock and ideology, and then there's the sort of the liberal Labour that had a focus on social issues. I think our communication strategy let us down. We perhaps were too caught up in saving the country and getting on with the job that we forgot a lot of the time to communicate back out. Like, one of the things I think is incredible, and I always hold it up, and I was in here speaking to you previously about Congress's Charter for Fair Conditions at Work. Yeah. And if you look at the signatories on that, only 7 Fine Gael TDs signed it. But yet, Jed Nash was able to convince Fine Gael to bring in collective bargaining legislation. The first country, the only country in the world, actually, that has done it in this current climate. So when you look at what we were working with and also being in a 2-to-1 minority, I think we delivered a lot. But it's like you said, somebody had to take a battering, and it was Labour, unfortunately, on this occasion.
And it's going to be a huge battle to ring back to confidence of the people, but the likes of yourself working on the ground, as you say, with the people, you know.
I think and it takes time as well for people to get to know you and for you to sort of gain people's trust and to work with them on issues. And I think it's doable. I think Labour councillors, Labour TDs have a very good reputation for hard work on the ground. Sometimes I think people get caught up in sort of the media spin with regard to what we're doing, what we're not doing. And then there's also like, who wants to back a loser? And I think sometimes that had an impact on people. But, you know, we've a lot of work to do, and hopefully come the next election, we'll have a better result.
Okay, Alison, unfortunately, now that the clock has beaten us, we've been talking for nearly half an hour.
It's lovely to talk to you, John,
lovely to have you back in the studio again. And I'm sure we'll talk again.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much,
You're
Alison.
You're very welcome. Take care.
Your alternative across northeast Dublin, 90.3. This is Near FM.